It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 377. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. The 1980s were awesome, and I'm pretty sure it all started with the 1980 BYU football team. We talk in this episode about Jim McMahon's magical year that ended in one of the greatest college football games of all time, simply called the Miracle Bowl. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. And listen to Matt and I talk about the 1980 football team and a few other things right now. So, Matt, I did see Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh, geez, finally. Where you been, man?
I don't know. And again, do you have to kill Han Solo in every movie? It's getting old. It's getting
every
tired.
Single movie.
It's getting tired. And then I also finished Stranger Things. Season 3.
I am yet to watch any of season 3 yet.
Yeah, I need to talk to someone that has watched, and it seems like none of my close friends and siblings have finished it yet. So I gotta find somebody to talk about it with. So finish it. Sweep the leg, Johnny.
I gotta start it. Finish him.
Get a body bag. You know, I'm just mixing 80s with 80s, right? I mean, Stranger Things is pure 80s, man.
Yeah, I guess.
What do you mean, you guess?
I don't know. That just felt like the right thing to say.
Oh, all right. All right, so anyway, that's our intro. There you go. There's your intro, and now we're going to do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. We got some BYU football players that have been named to award watch lists, Matt. Matt Bushman named to the Mackey Award watch list. James Empey to the Remington Trophy watch list. And Katoa to the Doak, what is that one? The running back
the
one?
The Doak Walker watch
list. Doak Walker.
Doak Walker.
The Doak Walker watch list.
Or otherwise known as the Luke Staley Award.
Yeah.
There are worse watch lists to be on than these watch lists.
No, it's good. It's good. I think, Bushman, you give him, 2% chance he could win it? 5%?
I think I have to stay with a pretty low number based on the discussions we've had and the things I've said about where I think he's going to end up in the offense.
Yeah, you've got to go probably lower than that. 5 is high at this point, right?
Yes, I think 5 is way high.
If you're not already the, odds-on favorite.
Right.
MP?
I mean, how many people did they list on the watch list?
A bunch. I can't remember. I saw the list.
Because they do a top 15 or whatever, and then they do other guys, right? And he's in that other guys category.
Correct.
So, I mean, he's...
Correct. MP, I'd give him something similar, and Katoa less. Because as we've talked about, even though I think Katoa will lead the team in rushing, I don't think they're going to have a featured back. I think there's going to be a number of guys getting the rock. So,
yeah.
Anyway, there's that. On KSL this week, Mitch Harper talked about the QBs and his Cougar tracks. We won't rehash. I listened to Harper. He's good. People can go check that out. Who's next after Wilson? It's Hall, right?
Yeah, it's definitely Hall. Absolutely, okay. Hall.
So they discussed this on his podcast, on his show. Is Hall the best athlete on the team? What do we think? I mean, it's a hard thing for us to judge who don't watch practice, and we've seen footage of Hall in a spring game, right? So judging on all of that extensive knowledge, is Hall the best athlete on the team?
I'm going to judge it off the things the coaches are saying and go ahead and say yes. I mean,
it's likely. Yeah.
Aaron Roderick has come just shy of saying exactly that.
Yeah. And he plays two sports, right, at the D1 level, so that bodes well. But here's the thing. What do you mean by athlete? Right? I think Tonga is supposed to be amazingly athletic. Right? He's not going to beat Hall in a 50-yard dash. But there's other things that he's going to do that Hall cannot. I mean, I don't feel like this is Taysom Hill, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Taysom Hill could bench as much as the lineman, and he was the fastest guy on the team, and he could dunk a basketball, from what I read, right? So you do all that thing, okay, it's him. But there's some other really athletic guys. Wilson himself, the starting quarterback's pretty athletic fellow, and you've got Bushman and a few other guys that are really good athletes too, right? So I don't know. He probably is, though, is my guess.
Yeah, I think he probably is. I'm going to go ahead and say he is.
Yeah, it's likely. We get our first tweet bag question of the day here in the CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Tweet bag.
It's from Kimberly Potts Fraser. She says, will you guys be attending the Tennessee game? For me, Matt, the answer is no. I will not.
Yeah, Rocky Top, negative.
I don't think
the
I
results,
will.
The results are in.
I don't think I'll be attending for work and personal and other reasons. I think this will be the first year in some time that I will not attend a game in person.
I'm afraid I may be in the same boat, my friend.
Yeah. So Rocky Top would be fun, but.
I'm not going to go to that game just on principle.
Why?
I'm mostly just saying this to get under Don's skin.
Because you hate Peyton Manning.
Sure.
And it's.
Sure, yeah, that's it.
Nationwide is on your side.
I actually love Peyton Manning. I think Peyton Manning is hilarious and one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
And one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
I don't know that he's the best quarterback to ever play at Tennessee.
T. Martin.
I might go with T. Martin there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he won the championship after Peyton failed to do so.
And I think T. Martin was rated higher on NCAA college football by EA Sports.
No.
I'm just saying.
You're making that up. Is that true?
I don't know.
Oh, you just made it up. Okay. All right.
I remember playing as T. Martin a lot. So, whatever that's worth.
All right. Whatever that's worth. Very little. In the bad news department, Matt, women's basketball player Shaylee Gonzalez will miss the 2019-20 basketball season after a knee injury. So feel terrible for her. Had a great year and anticipated big things. This is the unfortunate parts of being an athlete. It's these kind of things that go down. So good luck to her on her recovery.
Gut punch for that team. I mean, she's a very dynamic player. I mean, Yeah, you hate to see something like that happen. Somebody get an injury like that, practice, and
miss
an entire season. I mean, that's just
an entire season. But wishing her well, hoping for a good recovery so she can come back for the following year. Matt, sticking with basketball, Busting Brackets put out their list of a breakout player for each WCC men's basketball team for the next season. BYU, the player they listed was Gavin Baxter, which I think is a pretty decent choice. Who's your breakout player? It can't be Toulson, right? Because the guy just won like WAC Player of the Year. So it doesn't feel like Toulson can be a breakout player, right? If he has a good year and averages 18-4, that's not a breakout, right?
Well, I don't know. I think that if Toulson shows up in the West Coast Conference and makes a run at being Player of the Year in that conference, I'd call that a breakout year.
I wouldn't. He was just a player of the year in another conference. That's not as good.
The Mountain West Conference isn't what it used to be.
He's not. He was in the Mountain West. He was in the WAC, which
is
even less.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Mountain West, WAC. It's
I can't consider Toulson a breakout guy. We all know what he's capable of. We all know what he did. Somebody like Baxter or one of the other newcomers, or heck, even somebody like Hawes, if they took it to the new level. But maybe that's stupid because he's already been,
if Toulson can't be the breakout player, Hawes can't be a breakout player.
Yeah, he can.
Either.
I just am making this crap up as I go along.
You're just flipping this stuff around. You cannot, you're arguing out of both sides of your mouth.
I think Baxter's the obvious choice. I think actually Busting Brackets picked the right guy. So who is your breakout player? Is it Baxter? That's who I would have picked.
I don't know. I might go with Childs.
Oh, my gosh, stop it with Childs.
I don't know. Maybe Nick Emery.
Emery I could buy, actually.
Oh, I was just kidding. But,
He could be a breakout player. He hasn't had a great season yet. He's had one pretty good season and then two not good seasons. So
I'm going to stick with that one.
Emery
That's
totally
my
could
guess.
Be a breakout player.
That's my guess.
But I think Baxter could be it. I think that was a good pick. Well, Matt, we've got our popcorn popping segment, which I neglected to say the name of this segment last week.
I know, it was great. It saved us all the...
Oh, man. Primary's the best. All right, so last week we talked about the 1980-81 men's basketball team. We had some feedback from that show that I would like to talk about for a brief moment before we move on to this week's topic, which is the 1980 football team. All right. So
Cool. What did we hear? Who did we rile up this time?
Our brother Don, which is not hard. But by the way, did you listen all the way through to the "My Heart Will Go On" and Klingon?
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Anyway, so Don said this.
But Don dug that up for us, right?
He did. He did.
Where did you go find that?
Unfortunately, I Googled it as well. I could not find a... Oh, what's the Air Supply song I harmonized to last week?
I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you.
Fun fact, my wife has
seen Air Supply in concert.
So has Don. So your wife and Don have something in common. They're also related to you.
Don loves Air Supply. It's his favorite group.
It's his of all time. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
So he says, have you thought about having a guest who has actually saw the team from the 80s play? By the way, it depends on when in the 80s, because I've saw a lot of teams in the 80s play, Don. Thanks for remembering.
Sure, so did I.
And on an unrelated...
I was alive for almost the entire decade.
On an unrelated note, I'm busy tonight. Don, I don't know what he wanted. Was that like asking for an invitation to come on and talk about it? Now, he did say...
Don's busy going to bed early. Because he had dinner at 4:30, and now he's going to go to bed.
So, he did remind me, I had forgotten this, that our family had season tickets in 80-81. And Don went to a bunch of those games that year. But, I mean, what was he, like 10? Who cares?
He would have been 12. Been 11, 12 years old or something.
Yeah, still, I don't care about his opinion. Anyway, it is kind of funny. So, Russell Collier...
Are we going to bring, like, after this football season or basketball season, are we going to bring an 11-year-old kid on the show and ask him what he thought?
Yeah.
I don't even understand what Don's getting at.
So, on Facebook, and this Kimberly's question was also off Facebook, you can join the conversation there at facebook.com/riseandshout. Russell Caldwell had this to say about last week's show. Come on, guys, I love Jimmer Fredette, but there's no question who is the best player, meaning Jimmer or Danny Ainge. It's Danny Ainge. He was the best player on the team from the day he arrived on campus, and he easily had the better NBA career. So Matt, let's stop there and talk about this. I thought we made clear, and maybe we weren't clear enough, that Danny Ainge was the best player.
Yeah, I actually went back and listened after I read his question. I was like, what crazy thing did I say now? But the way that played out is you said, okay, so is Danny Ainge the best player of all time? And I was like, well, who is even the competition? Like, are we just saying who is it, him or maybe Jimmer? Just kind of like, yeah, I mean, he's head and shoulders above.
Well, the three of them, it's Jimmer, Michael Fredette, and Danny Ainge, right? And you got to pick your order. My order would be Danny Ainge, Jimmer Fredette, and Michael Smith. And then if you want to go back further.
You said Jimmer, Michael Fredette, and I was like,
what?
I was like, wait, no, Jimmer, Danny Ainge, you said just now, you Jimmer said Fredette, it's either, you said it's Michael Jimmer, Smith. Michael Fredette, Danny Ainge, or,
yeah, whatever, what whatever, after that, whatever.
But I was like, is Jimmer's middle name Michael?
Take it out.
Is he going by Jimmer's strike full
that.
Name?
Strike that.
Danny Jimmer, Ainge. Michael Fredette, you get over here right now.
Danny Ainge is number one. Jimmer Fredette is number two. Michael Smith is number three. And again, if you want to go back further than that, then
you can. But you're not going to find somebody that belongs in that group. That I mean, those are the best three. And Danny Ainge is the best player that's ever played basketball at BYU. So let's just make that point clear. So I apologize to Russell Caldwell for the confusion.
Well, I mean, Russell. I mean, he's totally right. I mean, one of the reasons that Fredette's peak year, his senior year, may be better than any of Danny Ainge's years. Maybe. You might be able to make that argument. The difference is Danny Ainge was the best player on the team, to Russell's point, from day one. His best seasons may have actually been that freshman and sophomore year. Statistically, they were quite good. So you look at that, he was great. I don't care about the NBA part, by the way.
No, that wasn't the argument. That wasn't the discussion.
I don't factor that in at all as to whether somebody was a good college basketball player or not. You know, Michael Smith was an amazing college basketball player, and he had a similar NBA career to Jimmer, right? First-round draft choice that just didn't pan out. Again, I don't care about that. You know, guys that were mediocre in college and end up becoming, like, Kawhi Leonard isn't now a better player than Jimmer was in college because he's become an NBA superstar. I mean, that's not how I view it, personally. Then Russell pointed out that Devin Durant was on his mission that year. Think about how much better they could have been with Devin on the team. It's one of those what-if scenarios, right? Are they a Final Four team with Devin Durant on the squad? Who knows? But possibly. I mean, they made the Elite Eight without him, so it's not a crazy stretch to say add another really good scorer to the team and you might have done better. All right, next on the tweet bag is from Gary Payne. That's at FastBreakGP on Twitter. You can tweet at us at BYU_RedShop. And speaking of last week's show, he says, not sure if I prefer Adam harmonizing to I'm All Out of Love or Matt's spoken word version to close out the show with you just
from the crossroads of the West.
That's right. Anyway, so it's a good deal. Thank you, Gary. He'll be heard from later in the show. So let's talk about...
I just want to know why my spoken word version gets air quotes, but your harmonizing does not.
Because you weren't actually doing the spoken word. You were just reciting the lyrics. I was harmonizing, right? So he's throwing in spoken word.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about that 1980 football team. I feel like I know this team better than the 80-81 men's basketball team because I've watched a bunch of these games on BYU TV.
There's some great games out of this season.
Right, and obviously the Miracle Bowl I've seen, I don't even know how many times now, right? And so I didn't, like Dawn, live this season in person, I feel like, you know, we can talk about this one with a little bit more like I've seen it than the men's basketball team. So let's talk about expectations, okay? So in 1979, the BYU Cougars were, wait for it, a one-loss team. 11-1, they go undefeated with Mark Wilson at the helm as the quarterback. They are the top-scoring team in the country, and their only loss is the bowl game loss to Indiana, who I think finished ranked like 19th, and they finished... BYU finished 13th in the AP poll, 14th, something. So the expectations were there in 1980. And McMahon had also played some before that, too. So people were high on him. So expectations were there. This was not a surprise season. So let's talk about the three big moments of the season as far as games are concerned. And the first one happens right in the first week on September the 6th. And it's a loss. And it's a terrible game when you go look at it. It's a loss to New Mexico. And I've talked to people that followed this team closely, including some sports writers, our father and others, where it was kind of like Jim McMahon just doesn't have it. Wilson was better. Right, they lay an absolute egg. McMahon in this game, Matt, 11 for 25 with an interception. He was sacked like 8 or 9 times. It was not a good game. The number one offense from the year before that averaged like 46 points, it manages only 21 points against New Mexico. Not good.
I didn't even realize New Mexico had a football team in 1980.
Oh, they did. They did. Not a great one. If you go and look at their record that year, they were 4-7. So not a great team. They lost to Missouri on the road, Texas Tech on the road, Colorado State and Hawaii at home. Hawaii was decent. UNLV, Utah, San Diego State. Yeah, they weren't a good team. Besides beating us, they beat New Mexico State, Wyoming on the road, and UTEP on the road. Heck, UTEP was barely past being called Texas Western at that point. So it was not a good start to the season. And you think about this, man, and I don't know if this is this year won't be a good correlation for it, but it's when you lose a game like this early, I mean, it's one of the worst losses in BYU history in that it takes this what if they had won that game and finished, and that Miracle Bowl with SMU that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes, what if that had been to be undefeated?
Like, are you looking at a national championship at that point?
No, I mean, I don't think so.
But if you're undefeated, do you end up in a different bowl game?
No.
Probably not in 1980.
Not in 1980.
The system just didn't work.
Yeah, there's no, you know, if you look at 1980 and who was good that year and all that stuff, right? I don't think you're going to see, I don't think you're going to see that. I mean, Georgia was undefeated, for example.
Right.
I don't think you see that in 1980 for BYU, but you probably finish in the top 10, and you know, at two undefeated seasons in five, I mean, not many schools can say that in their history. But regardless, I mean, you had a one-loss season in 1979 and another one-loss season in 1980. But the big thing when you look at these seasons and the argument against them being included on any great seasons in college football, obviously for BYU, 1980 is a great season, regardless, is the schedule. BYU did not play until SMU. They did not play a ranked team all year, and though there were some okay teams in the conference, nobody was really great.
Yeah, I mean, you've talked to this previously, though, right? Like, the UTEP win is not impressing anybody. The Wyoming win isn't impressing anybody. Long Beach State, you know, nobody really cares. There's not a ton of real solid quality on the schedule, right? But we said this for years. You can only play the schedule you're given.
You can only play the schedule you're given, and they dominated. Here's a nice nice historical note. Who was the consensus All-American, unanimous player, first team All-American at quarterback that year?
Ooh. I'm guessing this is a trick question.
I mean, I don't know if it's a trick question, but there was one BYU guy on the All-American team that year. If I'll give you a little clue.
So is it Jim McMahon?
It is not. The offensive lineman Nick Iyer was the All-American. Mark Herman of Purdue.
Was the
unanimous selection, which is, when you think about it, kind of crazy. But this is also in the area when the era when they being a senior meant something for these things. The sports writers rewarded seniors, and McMahon would have another year to do that. And obviously Herman would not. McMahon would come back the next year, win the Davey O'Brien Award. I think that was the first year they had that. And then would be the unanimous consensus All-American that next year, despite the fact that he didn't have as good of a season. But he then got rewarded for being a senior. Because you look at his junior season, it is off the charts. But we'll get back to that here in a second. His senior year was pretty good too. The next moment I would say that really mattered was they're cruising along playing some terrible teams, and then they had these two crucial road games at Utah State, who weren't a great team, and then at Hawaii, who were a little bit better. And this is when they went from being unranked because of that terrible loss against New Mexico that kind of haunted them for the first month and a half of the season, to being ranked was after these games. The reason isn't because of how the fact that they beat these teams, but it was the domination. 70 points against Utah State.
Yeah, and I don't care who you play. 70 points, and then a couple weeks later, 83 points. I mean, that's a whole lot of offense. But yeah. For me, this really does beg the question, right? We have a lot of discussion now in the age of independence around scheduling, and there's discussion, you know, if you get realistic about moving into a P5 conference, what can we really expect the schedule and the record to look like year in and year out, and you know, how would we really fit in that type of a conference? But if you dial back the clock and you take this team and you throw them in one of those other conferences, I don't know if they go undefeated, but they come pretty close. They were cruising.
Yeah, look at, I mean, one of the wins was at Wisconsin. Wisconsin was not good that year. 4-7, probably not even a top 60 or 65 team. But you look at the Big Ten that year. Let's just take the Big Ten. They had three good teams, and everybody else was mediocre or bad that year. Not as strong as, say, the Big Ten is today. And this goes to your point in the podcast from way back in the summer when we originally did this, where you thought 2006 being the third or fourth best team, was that 2006 or 2009? You thought that was more impressive than, in this case, being the third best team in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes to your point. Not that I ever try to give you credit for stuff. But Michigan, Ohio State, and Purdue were all pretty good that year. Michigan was 10-2, Ohio State 9-3, Purdue 9-3. Obviously, we mentioned Herman. They had a very good offense that year. And then Purdue would go on and beat Missouri in the bowl game, and Michigan would beat Washington. And Ohio State, thank goodness, would lose, which is great. We're always excited about Ohio State losing, even if it's in the past. So you look at that, Matt, and you say, where would they fit in that conference? I bet you they're there with Ohio State and Purdue. I think the Big Ten that year, they possibly could have challenged Michigan for that title. So, I mean, that's just an example to back up what you just said. They wouldn't have gone undefeated. They wouldn't have had just one loss. They might have had two, but they still could have won the conference that year.
It still would have been a special season.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Still would have been a special season in conference. So Michigan that year lost to Notre Dame and South Carolina near the beginning of the year, and then ran the table the rest of the way. So it was a pretty cool season for Michigan. Started out ranked, pretty cool season. 1980 is an interesting year. If you go back, and which I have, and you go back and look at what went down that year, there's some pretty, it's a pretty interesting year. All right, so the other moment that mattered was the Miracle Bowl. So let's talk about here that for a second. Let's talk about what led up to it, and then what that massive comeback, and let's look at it. So at one point, BYU is down 29-7 in the second quarter and not doing anything offensively. It the only other game where they had been stifled like this was that New Mexico game. And obviously a lot of the, and if you even listen back to that broadcast, the announcers are basically saying in the second quarter, well, you know, they didn't play anybody this year. SMU is the best team they've played. You know, they haven't seen speed like this. Does this sound familiar?
Oh, geez. They haven't seen the speed. Yeah. The best speed money could buy.
Yeah, the best speed. They didn't, you know, BYU didn't have Southwest Conference speed. And you have to remember, the Southwest Conference was a big deal in 1980.
SMU was a powerhouse during this period of time.
Oh, I mean,
they were a year in, year out contender. I mean, this was BYU, given their history and where they, you know, and while they had enjoyed some brief success leading, you know, kind of just barely leading into this season, nobody would have expected BYU to compete against SMU. I mean, this is pre-death penalty, right? So this is your daddy's SMU. This isn't your SMU.
Yeah, I mean, As Lee Corso once said to Craig James, the only complaint you, Craig, had when you were there is that Eric Dickerson was making more money than you.
So, but justified. I mean, Eric Dickerson was a much better player than Craig James.
Oh, stop it. Craig James, amazing college running back. Amazing. He is Mr. Bitter Pants, but he was an amazing. You've watched his game, right?
He hates BYU.
Well, he hates a lot of things.
He hates BYU.
But in this game, Craig James and Eric Dickerson ran all over BYU. A combined.
Who did it? Eric Dickerson is one of the greatest of all time, man. Yeah,
46 carries, 345 yards. 335, I did the math wrong. 335 yards, four touchdowns for those two. Yeah, and their quarterback also had 65 yards rushing. Now, obviously, they were a rushing team. They only threw the ball 11 times. Well, the defense, BYU's defense in the second half starts tightening up. But even going in the fourth quarter, SMU is ahead 38-19, looking very good. And then BYU just starts rolling. And you watch that game, McMahon's not completely healthy, and he just keeps slinging it around, and it's been a long year, and he's been beat up, and he just keeps going. And then, of course, the touchdown pass to Clay Brown at the end of the game. So Matt, Gary Payne wanted to bring this. He says he's confirmed this story but I thought this story had been confirmed, the one with McMahon and the Catholic thing. Do you know if that story? Well, Gary says it's confirmed, so we'll trust him. He said he confirmed it with Lavelle. The story goes this way, that McMahon comes off the field and says something about how two Catholics had to win the game for him to Lavelle. And Lavelle deadpans is like, well, my Mormon kicker actually has got to kick this extra point for us to win the game. So,
I've heard that.
Again, I'll trust Gary on this one. I didn't know if it was apocryphal or actually true, that story. But it's a great story regardless, and it sounds just like McMahon, right?
Oh, it does.
Sounds like McMahon. So, anyway, Matt, I'm going to say this. This is one of the most important college football games of all time.
Yeah, it is. You know, I remember, I don't remember what year this, that on the video game that this happened, but you remember there was a year where they put in like a dozen famous endings to football games over the, on NCAA football.
Yep.
And it was, can you go and mount this comeback? Can you go and do this? And one of them was this game. And I believe you started out down, I think you only had scored once at the point that they handed it to you. And it was, can you turn this around? And I remember trying to do that. You're like, how do you slow down these running backs? You know, and watching the game, it was like a series of what felt like at the time moral victories, right? They were closing the gap and closing the gap. But the way that had been going, I thought, oh, well, there's no way they're going to like really do this. But, man, way to make it look competitive. And then all of a sudden, here they are. It's an amazing football game that I think any college football fan is familiar with and talks about.
Yeah, so you just laid out one of the biggest reasons it's made an impression historically is because of the just magnitude of the comeback that was necessary for this to go down. The other pieces we've already alluded to, which is you had at the time the best quarterback in college football history, at least statistically. You can make some arguments that some of the other guys earlier just weren't asked to do what McMahon did, right? Gracie and Staubach and pick whomever, right? But arguably at this point, one of the best. How about that? One of the best college quarterbacks of all time and two of the best college running backs of all time. Right there all in this game as well. And unlike the 1984 Holiday Bowl where BYU beat a fairly mediocre Michigan team, this SMU team was quite good. Though they ended up with four losses, if you look at who they lost to that year, I mean, they were a very good team. They lost to a ranked Baylor team on the road. They lost to Houston at home. They beat Texas on the road, who was ranked second in the country. They lost to Texas Tech and to us. They lost to good teams that year. And you know, you look at all of those things and you say, well, this is not the best team BYU ever beat, you know, on paper, but one of the best teams BYU ever beat on paper, on top of all that stuff too, right? Like, if the comeback is against Akron, it's not as memorable either.
Nobody cares about that.
But SMU, you watch that first half, and it just seemed like BYU will never be able to stop Craig James or Eric Dickerson. They just will never be able to tackle them without it resulting in a large game. And then the defense picked it up, and obviously McMahon's heroics in the second half are legendary. So let's talk about the players that mattered this year. And obviously McMahon, we've already talked about him, but we should just talk about his season here for a second and where it stood in the context of college football. 4,571 yards, 10 yards per pass attempt, 47 touchdowns. I don't know what else I can say. At the time, these numbers were insanely high, right? Insanely high. I mean, I think Herschel Walker won the Heisman this year, right? In 80?
I believe that's correct.
You know, these were, people didn't know what to do with these numbers. If video games had been a thing at the time, it would have been video game numbers, right? Like, nobody knew what to do with them. It's like, it was hard to even put them into context in the 80s because, well, no one had done this with the football before. So what do you do? Is this real? Is it a system? Is it, you know, is it imaginary? And after Wilson had done it, and McMahon, and then Young, and then Bosco, everybody, for a while, I think, now people appreciate McMahon as one of the greatest of all time. I think at the time, there's a large group of people that just thought, this is just some weird system, and you could put any guy in it. But as we found out in the late 80s, you cannot actually put any person in it. You have to have somebody who's really good.
Well, you can. You just aren't going to get the results.
Right. You will not see the same. You will not see the same thing. And I mean, it was. Just,
and this isn't like when Colt Brennan was putting up ridiculous numbers at Hawaii, right? Because it's just not the same. I don't think he panned out the same. I don't think he's the same level of quarterback as a Jim McMahon. But no, I've heard people try and make those types of comparisons, right, based on the quality of the schedule BYU was playing in 1980 and those types of things. But it is not the same thing. Jim McMahon was a phenom.
Brennan's the problem with those arguments is it's the differential between McMahon and the rest of the field. And some people are going to hate me for this because people hate Barry Bonds. But Barry Bonds is potentially, you know, one of the best baseball players, not potentially, is one of the best baseball players of all time. Right?
Yep.
An amazing baseball player. He was great at it. But he's not as great as Babe Ruth. Why? Because Babe Ruth's differential between him and the rest of the league was so wide. And this is where McMahon was in 1980. His differential was so big. No one was even close to what he was doing. When Colt Brennan did it, there were a bunch of other quarterbacks doing pretty amazing stuff at the time. And McMahon, as he showed against an SMU team that had been pretty good defensively, he could shred even a very, very good defense. And there were some good defenses in the WAC that year, too, that he made look pretty foolish. So, I mean, McMahon's one of the best. So, obviously, McMahon. Who else on this team do we need to talk about individually? I mean, the offense obviously wasn't a one-man show.
Well, I think, you know, you made reference to one earlier that I think we need to talk about, and that's Clay Brown.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, the guy was ridiculous, right? I mean, over 1,000 yards receiving, 15 touchdowns, you know, big catches at big moments in games. I mean, he was if you're making a list of the top two or three guys on this team, I mean, you've got to talk about him, and that list is probably all offense.
Well, Iyer is another one. He was a All-American as an offensive lineman. You could talk about that entire offensive line, really. I mean, you can't put up that type of offensive numbers with a below-average offensive line. That's not...
Yeah, well, especially those types of passing numbers. I mean, because pass blocking is hard.
Pass blocking is hard. There's no doubt about that. But they also, I mean, you look at the rushing game. Lane averaged almost 5 yards a carry. Phillips averaged over six. I mean, this was not an elite rushing team, but it was a pretty good rushing team. I mean, these numbers are inflated because, gosh, I mean, you could not stack the box against McMahon. So there was going to be lanes. But this offensive line was pretty good. But the defense was not terrible.
Isn't like when we were, you know, rolling up points in the, later in the 1980s with defenses that were given, you know what I mean? So you're having these shootouts of 63 to 62 types of games, right?
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that this year, but that was against some pretty good offenses.
16.5 points per game. They gave up total yards per game yards per play was under 4.5, which is a pretty good marker, especially this time when your offense is gaining almost 8 yards a play. Certainly was sufficient. They had some good guys on this team, good defensive players. Glenn Redd led the team in tackles that year. Ed St. Pierre had a really good year, 5 sacks. A couple guys you may have heard of, Matt. Kyle Whittingham, you ever heard of him?
Oh, Kyle Whittingham. Yeah, Rings a bell.
Rings a bell. And then Tom Homo.
Isn't that crazy?
Led the team with 7 interceptions and also finished the year with 57 tackles. And you look at this, several of these guys ended up either playing in the NFL or getting at least a little bit taste of the next level.
So wait, 40 years from now, are we going to be having conversations about like, oh well, Luke Staley, who's now, you know, the coach at wherever, you know, are we having these types of conversations about the players that we're cheering for today?
Luke Staley, what?
I just threw out
current player, dude. Your argument needs a current player.
Okay, I guess he's been out for a little
while.
Yeah,
a little bit, like 20 years.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Pick,
all right, whatever.
Pick a current player. Just pick somebody on the roster, dude. Come on.
We're talking about Zach Wilson and now he's the athletic director. Is that what the future of this is?
Of course it is.
It's crazy.
I mean, who's our coach now?
Zach Wilson.
Is our coach now. Roderick is the quarterback coach, right?
Whittingham is the coach of Utah.
That's the one. That's the bizarro universe that seems weird now, right? That Whittingham is the coach of the University of Utah.
Who on our current roster today is most likely to become the head coach of the University of Utah? I guess that's really my question.
Wilson.
It probably is.
It is Wilson. It could be you.
It's Wilson. Oh, no.
I don't know.
I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it as long as we beat him, as long as he leads us to consecutive victories against Utah or something, I'm cool with it. He can go and coach there when he's done.
I don't know if that's possible anymore with the fights his mom has with Ute Twitter.
It's not going to matter. It's like when Whittingham took the job, right? It was the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's what those things are really about. But
you think Max Hall could become coach at the University of Utah? I'm just saying there's certain lines.
Steve Sarkisian. Do you think Steve Sarkisian would do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, but that's totally different. That's totally different.
He didn't have the run-in that Max Hall had.
Yeah,
I hate them all.
He didn't do that. And Steve Sarkisian's mom was.
I hate everything about them.
Yeah, Steve Sarkisian's mom wasn't on Twitter getting trolled by idiot Ute fans, right? And responding, right? Which, by the way, she's doing a great job. She's doing a great job.
I can't wait for Joe Critchlow to come back and be the athletic director. It's going to be fantastic.
Totally could. I could see that. And by the way, before anybody jumps down my throat, not all Ute fans are idiots. Okay? This is a minority that is going after, is it Lisa Wilson, right? Zach's mom?
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's weird. Stupid. People get on Twitter and get weird.
Yeah, yeah. And she does a good job responding to it. But it's they're idiot BYU fans on Twitter too, right? So, but anyway, getting back to this team, you know, this was an offensive first team, and like you said, the three best players on the team may be Iyer, Brown, and McMahon. right? That just may be the answer because of how freaking good this offense was.
Yeah.
And you don't, and we're not even talking about, we didn't talk about, we mentioned Lane, Phillips. I mean, there were other guys on this offense too, besides those three, but.
Sure.
But this defense was pretty good and had some pretty good players on it as well. So we should talk about that. So
Holmes, 7 interceptions. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he had a great season. So so Matt, let's talk about the legacy of this team. Obviously, the 79 through 83 season set up the championship in 1984, which we'll talk about in a subsequent podcast. But there is no 1984 national championship without 1980, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Just doesn't exist. You needed 79, 80, 81, 82 was obviously a little bit down, and we'll talk about this more in the 80 when we talk about the 84 team. And then that 83 was really like the lob, you know, set, if you will. But this was the early setup that was necessary.
You know, I wonder, you go back earlier, had the team gone undefeated in 1980, do you think that that sets up the 83 team to be viewed differently? Or would they just have had to have been a better team to take advantage of that?
Not a better team. They just, I think the 83 team, I think the 83 team's a better team than the 1984 team. I don't think I'm saying anything controversial, right? Their problem is they lost, just like this 80 team, they lost a stupid game at the beginning of the year.
Right.
You know, they lost to Baylor. And actually, the 83 is way better. Baylor was at least decent. They weren't great. And it was on the road.
Yeah, that's not losing to New Mexico. That is not the same thing.
But yes, the 80 team could have been the ones that won the national championship. You'd have to look at... I don't know if the window in 83 was good enough for BYU to do it, right? Because you needed that window of not having an undefeated team or just a one-loss team that everybody was in love with, right? You needed that. 84, and we'll talk about that. But yes, absolutely. This 80 season helped set up the potential for us for a national championship, regardless of whether it was 83 or 84. This was an amazing season. And that bowl game, you know, at the advent, because remember, there weren't a lot of college football games on TV.
Right.
So there are people I know that are old-time college football fans who watch this game. You want to know why they watch this game? Because it was football on TV. They didn't care about SMU and they didn't care about BYU. There were, you remember my friend Frank from high school. His dad could tell you every freaking play from this game. The first time I met him, all he wanted to talk about was the Miracle Bowl. Because he was a massive college football fan, and he had watched this game live on ESPN. Right? It was ESPN? In 1980?
ABC? 1980 was not ESPN.
Who was it?
ESPN's first college football broadcast was BYU Pitt in 1980.
Oh, yeah, 81. Yeah, yeah. So who was it? ABC or CBS? Whoever it was.
Yeah, right? Something, whoever it was.
So he saw this game, and, like, it's a big deal, right? But the other part of the legacy of this team obviously is carried on by the fact that there were a couple of players that went on to the NFL, Homo, McMahon. So that gives it more mystique and legacy, right? It doesn't change what happened in the game or their college careers, but it does attach some strings to it, right? McMahon not only, you know, was a consensus All-American and had this amazing season. He also won a Super Bowl as a quarterback.
Yeah, a couple of years later, he's doing the Super Bowl shuffle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, doing the Super Bowl shuffle. So let's talk about great games. So Gary Payne asked this is, greatest ending to a BYU football game, okay? Miracle Bowl, the Mangum Miracle against Nebraska. I think he's talking about the Nebraska one. I guess you could talk about Boise, right? Boise State. Or back to Harlane. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Matt, what is the best ending to a BYU football game? Let's just take those three.
If I have to choose among those three, I'm actually taking Beck to Harlane, and it is recency bias. Absolutely.
I'm taking the Miracle Bowl because of the context of that game and the whole build up to the end of it. I would say because I wasn't conscious in 1980. Well, I was conscious. I was just four. When this all went down, my favorite of all time is Back to Arlene, and that's not particularly close, right?
Yeah, I walked around with Rubel's Call as my ringtone on my phone for several months after that game. Yeah, and as you may remember, I did have the opportunity one time to sit and have to sit at dinner with John Beck and have him recall the end of that game, which he was absolutely into doing.
He's been on this podcast before and recalled it, if you remember.
It was an amazing win. Now, what's different, I think, about the Miracle Bowl compared to the Back to Harleen is the succession of plays that were required to make that happen. Now, there were a couple big plays in that Back to Harleen game, right, that set that up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But the way you were coming from so far from behind against SMU, against a team that on paper was just so much better than you, you could argue pretty easily that was a big one.
Well, and there were 18 moments in that fourth quarter, and I made that number up, where things could have easily tipped against BYU in that SMU game. Mm-hmm. Right? There were plays that SMU should have made. Missed blocks, a couple of weird things. And obviously, BYU needed a little bit of luck, too, right? And some misplays. And then, like I said, amazing plays by Clay Brown and Jim McMahon. So Daniel Smith asks us this question on Facebook. What are the single best and worst games ever in BYU football history? This seems like a show all its own. And what, if any, games do you rewatch to prepare for the BYU football game? I'll just pick mine real fast, Matt. We don't have to dive too far into them. I think the best game in BYU's football history is the Miracle Bowl. And I think the worst game in BYU history is last year's Utah game. Recency bias. With honorable
recency bias included.
With honorable mention to that stupid Virginia game.
Ooh, the stupid Virginia game.
Yeah, with the lightning delay and all that garbage. Hated that game.
That game was.
But I'll tell you another game I hated watching was, what was that? Was 6-3 when we lost was that 03? 04 when we lost to to Utah in the snow?
Oh, yeah, I was at that game.
Ugh, that game was gross. I hated that game. So, I don't know. I have a hard time picking that. And with the best, I could go on with some others. What about you? Best, worst?
Come on. Best game, Texas A&M, 1996.
All right.
It's obviously going to be my favorite.
What about Miami? Miami's a good one, too.
Miami's a pretty good one. Yeah. That's pretty good. But you know, the worst is for me, the one that immediately jumped out.
What's that?
1985 UTEP.
Oh, that's a terrible one.
What did they win? They won, I think, a single game that year, and it was against us.
It was the worst team BYU has lost to when they've been good, and it's not particularly close. I mean, that Virginia team wasn't good that we lost to. There's been...
Yeah, but UTEP was flipping terrible.
That is the most... You know, at least this New Mexico team that beat them in 1980, they weren't good, but they weren't 1-10. Right? I think they won four games
that
year.
UTEP team was historically bad.
Super bad. Super bad. All right, Matt. Super bad.
Make a movie called Super Bad.
Yeah, they should do that. So we're going to end with a game that is provided by our friend Justin D. Sweeney.
Sweeney!
He says, finish the following sentences. So we're going to call this fill in the blank.
You should almost do it like a Mad Lib. But it's too late because I've already read it.
No, it's too late. All right. Finish the following sentences. If BYU loses to Utah again to open the season, no less, I will blank. Matt, what will you do?
Shave my head.
You already shave your head. That's stupid. I will cry like a small child.
I will not watch college football for 24 hours.
Oh yeah, okay.
I don't know that I miss a single game because that game's on a Thursday night.
Yeah. You're very All right. If another school gets chosen instead of BYU to go to a Power 5 conference in the next wave of realignment, I will blank. Matt?
I will remain calm because I absolutely expect this to happen. Yeah, I'm going to be frustrated when it happens. I'm going to be angry, but I absolutely expect this to be the case.
I will not be surprised. That's my fill in the blank. And the last one, if Rise and Shout, the Rise and Shout podcast, keeps reading Justin's awful tweet bag questions, I will blank. Matt?
Sing Air Supply.
That's all I can come up with. I'm so lost without you.
What is Justin, what are you doing, man? Justin, you don't have awful tweet bag questions. Stop it with the hate.
No, he's looking for compliments. Don't give in.
Oh, he's fishing for compliments. Fishing I'm for totally compliments. Giving in.
And you totally give in.
Oh, yeah, Sweeney, your tweet bag game sucks, Sweeney. Yeah,
hashtag trash bag.
Trash bag. That's funny because it's an actual thing.
Yeah, it's funny because it's true.
Because it's a thing.
Anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We will be back next time to talk about the 2010-2011 men's basketball team. One we don't need Don's help with. We were there.
Hey, do you know what we should do in the spirit of Sweeney's question? And I'm just throwing this out here for you. We've not discussed this. My freshman year at BYU, I had a visiting professor who taught American Heritage. I'll make this brief.
And yeah, we're 56 minutes in there, buddy.
So. We were doing a fundraiser, and he said, hey, look, if you raise, I don't remember what the dollar target was, but if we raise this much money for whatever the charity, I have no recollection of what it was. He said, I will do one of three things, and I will let you vote. One item was he would, in front of the entire class, swallow a live goldfish. Number two was he would dance to You Can't Touch This wearing MC Hammer pants. And number three was he would let two or three students throw pies in his face. And if we raised the money, we could choose the item based on a vote. And we raised the money. It was overwhelmingly eat a live goldfish because, I mean, seriously.
How'd that
and
go?
People were all up in arms. He got all sorts of feedback from students that he could not eat a live goldfish. So he decided that instead of eating a live goldfish, he would do both of the other things. And it was awesome.
Wait a second. Stop. Why can't he eat a live goldfish?
Because it was inhumane. He can't eat a live goldfish.
They're disposable. Goldfish are raised in factories and die a week later.
As a matter of fact, that goldfish probably would have lived longer had he been trying to keep it alive long enough to eat it alive, right?
Well, that's stupid. People are dumb.
So anyway, but it was great because we got two of the other things. I'm not disagreeing with your point about the goldfish. Yeah, that would have been really funny. But we got both of the other things.
I guess that's a good outcome.
The hammer pants was ridiculous. Can you imagine me getting up and dancing in hammer pants?
I would love to see that, actually.
It was fantastic. And then we went outside and like four students threw pies at his face. It was amazing.
So awesome.
We should make a challenge like that on the Utah game. That would be funny.
I'm still not following what you're talking about.
I don't know. People give us some ideas. What crazy thing should we do if BYU loses this game? What crazy thing am I going to have to do if BYU loses this game? I'm looking to you, Twitter.
All right, listeners. Matt has thrown down the gauntlet. What crazy thing is he going to do if BYU loses to Utah? Notice that I said he.
Eat a live goldfish is not on the list.
Eat a live goldfish is not on the list because it's inhumane. I mean, it's terrible.
We've already established
Look at
that.
Those poor goldfish. I mean, they're...
We've established that that's off the list.
So does this make me a bad person if I used to buy goldfish to feed to my bigger fish in my fish tank?
No, that's what they're... Four, isn't it? It's like buying crickets to feed your snake or your iguana or whatever.
Yeah, I don't. People are dumb. Anyway,
good source of protein.
Dang, Skippy. All right. Well, thanks everybody for thanks everybody for downloading. Oh, we didn't do the songs from 1980 again. I feel like we just did this.
Losers.
I feel like we just did this because it's like
We just did. It's the same songs.
It's the same songs.
There are no good songs. Players were not fired up in the locker room in 1980 because the songs were all Air Supply, okay, and the Jackson 5. It was not a good time for, like, pump-up music.
1978, We Will Rock You came out.
Well, then it must have been what they were still listening to because I don't know what else anybody was doing.
There's nothing, man. What are they going to do? Like, Shadow Dancing, Night Fever by the Bee Gees, You Light Up My Life. I mean, this is 1978. I just listed off the top five songs from 1978. It's not good. Well, as...
I mean, you don't even get, like, yeah, I mean, Blue Oyster Cult in 1981. I mean, and who do you even... I mean, I don't even know. Like, what do you get in 1980?
You're the One That I Want. Yeah, I mean, these were the songs. These were, like, top 15 songs.
The Ramones were big. I'm just trying to think of bands that were... Yeah, I don't...
Ramones might be good. But anyway. All right. So we're not doing any more, but as we end, you're again listening to Air Supply. So we'll finish with some more Air Supply. Like I said, we'll be back to talk about the 2010-11 men's basketball team. If you want to email the show, you can do so at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
I'm lying alone with my head on the phone, thinking of you till it hurts. I know you hurt too, but what else can we do? Tormented and torn apart. I wish I could carry your smile in my heart for times when my life seems so low. It would make me believe what tomorrow. What would you say if I called on you now and said